It's time for What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Reddy.
Morena, Dr. Shane Reddy, how are you this morning?
Very good, thank you, Zoe. Hope everything's well with you.
Business as usual at 95 FM. Well, besides our most people working remotely. Anyway, the whole of New Zealand is now in an alert level 4 lockdown as of 11:59 PM due to a case of COVID-19 being detected in Auckland with no links to the border or MIQ facilities. It's now been confirmed as the Delta variant and there are 4 new cases. As a doctor and deputy leader of the opposition party, how do you feel about this decision? And are you confident that 7 days at alert level 4 in Auckland and the Coromandel Peninsula and 3 days for the rest of the country will be sufficient in containing an outbreak?
So it is the right decision to go into lockdown. We know that it is a requirement, we know from the international experience, that if you want to get the best outcome possible, that a lockdown is necessary. And so we do support the decision to go into a lockdown. With a view to whether 3 days is going to be enough, we simply don't have the army of officials, modellers, analysts and information that the government has to make that decision. I think what is useful is that it is a more nuanced lockdown from what we've had previously, which has been quite widespread. And I'm sure there'll be discussions around whether the South Island should have a different form of lockdown as well. But this is a different form of variant which we haven't confronted before. So there is some newness to us in this around the previous lockdowns that we've had and how successful or otherwise they've been. So hard to say at this point whether 3 days is going to be enough. Certainly people should anticipate that it may, now we know there's 4 more, it may need to be longer, as might the 7 days need to be longer. But as an initial flag in the sand of here's where we're going to start, where we get more information, it's a reasonable starting point. And New Zealanders and experts were calling for a more nuanced lockdown framework than what we had previously. And so that's what we've got now.
Now, why is the Delta variant more concerning than other strains of COVID-19 that we've previously dealt with here in Aotearoa?
Oh, 2 reasons for that. The first is transmission and the second is the consequences. First is transmission. It has an R number significantly higher than other variants. That is, it's much more infectious. And the example used is the transmission in Sydney where people basically walked either side of the street and transmitted it. And in our own hands, we had the people at the jet park, one infected, one not. They simultaneously opened their hotel door at the same time, and across the corridor was enough to spread transmission as far as we can tell. So its transmission is very infective, the Delta virus. Secondly, if you do catch Delta, the suggestions that you have a more protracted and difficult course with coronavirus infection. So those are the 2 reasons that primarily make Delta a much greater challenge.
Now, we've seen the effects on of the Delta variant around the world, and in particularly the harm it's doing in Australia. How equipped would we be as a nation should the virus not be contained, particularly in terms of hospital resources?
So this is what we're going to find out. If we remember again, those 3 buckets that offer us protection, airport, community response, and then vaccination rate. Airport, and of course the marine border, it has received a lot of attention lately, but it's the community response, contact tracing, ICU beds, ventilators, social distancing. It's those things that are going to come into play here now, as well, of course, as our background vaccination rate, which we've been wanting to get higher as quickly as we can. But potentially we're going to put the system to the test here now, and certainly we've all been asking, have we got enough ventilators, how quickly can we bring up contact tracing. We had some concerns about 3 weeks ago. There's a little bit of timing that's gone in our favour, because if you recall, we had RSV about 3 weeks ago. And you know, if a child doesn't do well to RSV, your next step is to place them on a ventilator in ICU. And there was some concern that if we had a coronavirus outbreak then, that we could be stretched with our resources. Mm. All the evidence I'm seeing is that we've come down the other side, thank goodness, of that RSV outbreak. So hopefully all the resources which we'll need will be available to us.
Now, how is the vaccine rollout going to be affected by the Alert Level 4 lockdown?
So as far as we can tell, there's a 48-hour pause on the vaccine. because at this point, contact tracing, closing down that network of contacts, identifying it, that is the first priority. And so what the government has said is we won't have vaccination for another 48 hours, and then they'll assess bringing up the vaccination response. So there's a slight pause here, and then we'll hopefully be able to roll it out a day after tomorrow.
Mm. You did mention community response before, and what we've seen in Australia, along with a lot of people complying with the lockdown requirements, but there have been anti-lockdown protests and potentially super spreader events. What would you say to people here in Aotearoa who may share these sentiments?
I'm sorry, those sentiments are not supported by the science, and that does not help our collective response. Our collective response is to follow the level 4 restrictions in our own hands, to be good with hand hygiene, mask hygiene, cough hygiene, tracer use. That's what we all need to do if we're going to get the best outcome possible.
Mm. And any recommendations on how the government should be best supporting businesses during this time?
Look, I noted that they'd brought out the economic response because it is a 7-day ask, certainly for Auckland and Coromandel. And what the government needs to be looking at is how it can support businesses. They'll have a lot of experience with this now, how they can best support and identify those businesses who are going to struggle the most. That will be the challenge for Grant Robertson.
Mm. I'd like to move along from COVID now and touch briefly on the conversion therapy ban legislation. The National Party all voted against banning conversion therapy. They were the only party to do this. Can you please explain why this was your decision?
Oh, yeah, sure. So we absolutely support the intent of the bill and some of the barbaric practices that it looks to put a halt to. What our concern is that it's a poorly drafted bill. Even Chris Farfoy and the Prime Minister were struggling to answer questions around primarily whether a parent could be prosecuted for exercising reasonable parental advice and instruction. And this is the core for it for us. We're concerned that the bill removes some of the responsibilities and privileges of being a parent. And when the Minister and the Prime Minister cannot give assurances that it will not, then we remain concerned with that. If there was a parental exemption in the bill, we're good to go. We've always said that this is our issue. If they're uncertain, we're uncertain, and this is really important.
But
so
it,
when this goes to... Sorry, go ahead.
Is the purpose of the legislative process not to work out these points of contention? Because ACT had similar concerns. They said they had serious concerns about the bill in its current form, but they still voted yes. Did the National Party not trust the legislative process to work out these technical issues that they do disagree with?
We needed to establish a position here and now, and the onus is actually on the government to bring in well-prepared legislation and to be able to answer it before it gets to select committee. If you start off a bill and you can't answer questions around it, well, that gives a lot of concern around the whole intent of the bill and what other things might be there. So no, we needed to take a position right here and now, which we've done, and then having said that and with the majority voting it through, we'll then take a responsible position to try and make the best of it and understand what the failings of the legislation are in select committee and see if we can figure out this parental exemption or at least massage the legislation so it doesn't override parental rights.
Now, Pride organisers have already said that the National Party is no longer welcome at Pride events, and the Big Gay Out is also considering revoking invitations to National Party MPs. You can only go so far down the road of making decisions against certain communities before you risk losing the voter base within that community altogether. Does the National Party have a plan to address this apparent dislike for the party within the LGBTQIA plus community?
Oh, well, we could have that discussion around farmers. Does the government want to continue down the pathway with legislation, climate change, SNAs, high pastoral leases and disenfranchise the whole cohort?
I know, but my question was, does the National Party have a plan to address this within the LGBTQIA plus community?
The National Party has always been sensitive to LGBT concerns. And we've always attended, as far as I can recall, parades and shown support another way. It will be for the discretion of the organisers if they wish to revoke those invitations. We remain open to conversation, and we've made very clear our position on the gay conversion bill. We remain open and willing to be supportive of the community.
Mm. I know you had to vote with the party, and this was a party decision, but could you tell us your personal opinion and professional opinion as a doctor on the conversion therapy bill?
The view that we've reached as a collective is the view that we'll be supporting in Parliament. I understand both sides of the argument with my doctor's hat on. I understand both sides of the argument, and actually had some quite long conversations with clinical directors at the College of GPs, which credentials me, seeking further advice, because they'll see more people than I see who are looking to get advice, both parents and people involved on this particular issue. So I spoke with several of them around what they're seeing and what their thinking is. And, you know, it's a really challenging discussion. I think there's some challenging stuff around whether things like puberty blockers do have a long-term consequence or not. My understanding is, and what the discussions were heading along was, it was a degree of caution, that there's still a large unknown with the puberty blockers. And some of the others have said no, they're comfortable, that there are no acute, medium or long-term consequences, but the clinical people I was speaking to said, oh, we're a bit more cautious, Shane. So very much gathering information in that space, but I've taken counsel from those who see a lot more of this than I do.
Now, similarities have been drawn to the opposition of the anti-smacking law when it was introduced in 2007. In the first 5 years of the law being introduced, no one was jailed. Only 8 cases of smacking and 47 alleged minor cases of physical discipline were prosecuted. And the most severe penalty reported was 2 hours of community service. Is the desire to add in a clause that exempts parents from prosecution really enough of a concern to vote against a bill which will do so much good and offer a lot of protection to a marginalised group in society?
Yes, I think so. Because against that context, we have to remember there's a lot of a lack of clarity in the bill. So there's lack of clarity around the rights and responsibilities of parents, and it's just a poorly drafted bill. So I understand the point you're making around smacking, and there were similar issues, as you say, around parental rights and what is reasonable for a parent to be able to do and what is not reasonable for a parent to be able to do. But we think in this instance, with that lack of clarity and with the poor drafting, that the question of parental responsibility is still very much up in the air and unanswered, and we think it should be addressed.
Well, that's all we have time for, Dr. Shane Reti, but thank you very much for your time this morning.
No, my pleasure. Kia pai tōra.
Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Deputy Leader of the Opposition, Dr. Shane Reti.